Right now, in one of the fastest growing regions in Texas, homes are sitting on the market longer than they were during that whole, you know, post-pandemic frenzy.
Yeah, but somehow they're actually selling faster than they did last year.
Exactly. I mean, the raw data shows that median prices are down, but then if you literally just look one column over, they're simultaneously up.
Right. And the inventory of homes is way tighter than it was 12 months ago. But
yeah,
fewer people are actually putting their houses up for sale.
It's wild. If you look at those statements on the surface, it feels like we're looking at a math equation that is just fundamentally broken.
Oh, absolutely broken.
Like, how can a market be speeding up and slowing down at the exact same time? Well, welcome to today's deep dive.
We are going to figure out exactly how that mathematical paradox actually makes perfect sense.
Because it is a paradox, right? Uh-huh. And it's causing a massive amount of confusion for, well, anyone trying to navigate this landscape.
Oh, massive confusion.
Yeah.
People are out here making huge financial decisions based on, fragmented headlines.
Yeah.
And that is just a really dangerous game to play.
It really is. And that's exactly why we're doing this. So today is Saturday, June 20th, 2026.
Right in the thick of it.
Yeah. Right in the thick of the North Texas summer. We're just a couple of weeks out from the 4th of July.
Get ready for the neighborhood cookouts.
Exactly. You're probably prepping the grill right now. And whether you're buying or selling or just, you know, trying to figure out what your own property is worth while you listen to this, you need clarity.
You really do.
Yeah.
And our focus today is Parker County.
Yeah, Parker County. For those of you familiar with the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, you already know it. It's arguably one of the most dynamic, complex, and just fascinating markets in the entire state.
It really is. And it's not just one monolithic thing either.
No, far from it.
The geographical and the demographic diversity within the county lines makes it this fascinating case study in modern real estate economics.
Totally. I mean, you have Weatherford, right? Which carries this incredible historic charm.
Yeah. Courthouse Square.
Right. The Courthouse Square. And it's known as the cutting horse capital of the world. But then you drive just a few miles east to Aledo.
And it's just explosive.
Explosive. Almost unprecedented suburban growth fueled by these highly rated school districts and, obviously, the proximity to Fort Worth.
And then you have Azle up by the lake, bringing in a completely different demographic.
Right. And woven between all of those towns, you have these massive, sprawling, rural corridors.
Yeah, the wide open spaces.
Exactly. It's this incredible collision of rapid suburban expansion and traditional, wide open Texas rural life.
Which means, you know, analyzing it requires a tremendous amount of nuance. You just cannot apply a one-size-fits-all metric to a county that contains both, like half-acre suburban new builds and 50-acre working cattle ranches.
Right. You can't just slap a median price on it and call it a day. So our mission today is to cut through all that noise.
And we brought the receipts.
We did. We brought a stack of dense mid-year real estate data to the table. Specifically, we're looking at the May 2026 market reports from NTrace.
Yep.
And we also have the Q1 MarketWatch data and the MLS summaries from the Texas A&M Real Estate Research Center.
Which is a fantastic resource, by the way.
Oh, the best. But before we jump into the numbers, can you just quickly define what those sources actually are? Like, when we say NTrace, what is that mechanism?
Sure. Yeah. So NTrace stands for the North Texas Real Estate Information Systems.
Okay.
Think of it as the central nervous system for all property transactions in the region. It's the underlying database that actually powers the MLS, the multiple listing service.
So it's where everything lives.
Exactly. Every time an agent inputs a new property or logs a price reduction or, you know, records a final closed sale, it goes into this centralized hub.
Right.
And then Texas A&M takes that massive raw data feed and applies this really strict academic rigor to it. They filter it to create these comprehensive market summaries.
Got it. So the data we're unpacking today, this isn't based on like surveys or consumer sentiment polls.
No, not at all.
It's the hard mathematical record of actual closed transactions.
Exactly. It's what actually happened, not what people feel is happening.
I love that. We aren't guessing. We are looking at the receipts. And looking at these receipts, I really want to start with the sheer engine of the market.
The transaction volume.
Yes, transaction volume. Because look, before we debate whether a house is overpriced or underpriced, We have to establish if anyone is actually buying anything.
Right. Are there buyers in the room?
Exactly. Because if I turn on the national financial news right now, the narrative is often that the housing market is just completely frozen.
Yeah, that's the headline everywhere.
They talk about high interest rates totally paralyzing the consumer. But what does the local data here actually say about volume?
Well, the local data tells a fundamentally different story than that national macroeconomic narrative. In May 2026, Parker County recorded 329 single-family home closings.
Okay, 329.
Yeah. And that is an 8.2% increase compared to May of 2025, which saw 304 closings.
Wait, an 8.2% increase in the number of actual physical homes changing hands?
Yes. And we really need to pause and internalize what that means on a logistical level.
Yeah, break that down for me.
329 closings in a single month. That is not just some abstract spreadsheet number.
Yeah.
That represents roughly 11 families moving every single day of the month.
Ugh, wow. 11 families a day.
Every day. It's a continuous stream of moving trucks, home inspectors, appraisers, and title agents, all operating at high capacity. I mean, it represents a tremendous amount of economic velocity for just one county.
That's a ton of moving boxes.
But is that just a fluke? Like, it may have just been an unusually busy month because school was letting out and people were rushing to close?
That is the critical question. And to answer it, we have to pull back the lens and look at the year-to-date figures.
Okay, let's look at it.
If we look at January through the end of May 2026, we see 12,296 closed sales.
Wow, almost 1,300. Right. And at this exact same point last year, that number was 12,206. So the year-to-date volume is actually up 7.5%.
So it's definitely not a fluke.
Not at all. This is not a monthly anomaly. This is a sustained, undeniable acceleration in the sheer volume of transactions.
This completely upends that whole frozen market narrative.
It shatters it, honestly.
It's like standing outside a restaurant at 3 in the afternoon, right? You look through the window at the empty tables and you just assume the business is failing.
Yeah, exactly.
But meanwhile, this data tells us the kitchen in the back is actually operating at maximum capacity. They're printing tickets, pushing out orders. The market is highly active.
Yeah, the concept we look at here in behavioral economics is the difference between what we call stated preferences and revealed preferences.
Okay, walk me through how that applies here.
So, if you conduct a survey and ask consumers about the economy or the housing market, their stated preferences are often highly negative.
Right. They complain about everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They'll tell you that inflation is concerning, that interest rates are way too high, and that it is just a terrible time to buy a house. They are stating their anxiety.
Sure. Which is valid. But what's the revealed preference?
Their revealed preferences are demonstrated by what they actually do with their capital. When push comes to shove, their actions reveal their true priorities.
Oh, I see.
And the year-to-date data, nearly 1,300 closed sales, is a massive indicator of revealed preference. Despite all that external economic noise, the desire and the financial capacity to purchase a home in Parker County remain extraordinarily resolute.
Okay, so who are these 1,300 buyers? Are we seeing a continuation of that pandemic-era trend where, you know, out-of-state buyers were just flooding in from California and New York? Or is this local reshuffling?
A great question.
Like, is it people moving from a starter home in Springtown up to a larger home in Weatherford?
Well, while the raw transaction data doesn't explicitly track the origin zip code of every single buyer, the sheer magnitude of the growth curve indicates it has to be a confluence of multiple demographic drivers.
Meaning it's a little bit of everything.
Exactly. You cannot sustain a 7.5% year-over-year volume growth strictly through internal municipal reshuffling. Parker County is actively absorbing new residents.
Yeah, you just can't organically grow that fast from within.
Right. Much of this is driven by the outward expansion of the DFW Metroplex. As areas closer to the urban core become, frankly, prohibitively expensive or just too densely populated, you see a natural westward migration.
That makes total sense. They're looking for breathing room.
Yep. Buyers are actively seeking the specific lifestyle Parker County offers, the larger lot sizes, highly rated independent school districts, lower population density, and they're proving they have the liquidity to actually execute those moves.
Okay, so the engine is humming, the volume is there, people are moving.
Oh, they are definitely moving.
But let's get to the question that every single person listening really cares about, the dollar signs?
Always the dollar signs.
Right. If 329 houses sold in May, what did they actually sell for? Let's dive into the pricing data, because this is where those contradictory headlines we talked about at the beginning really start to mess with your head.
Oh, pricing data is highly susceptible to misinterpretation.
Extremely.
Primarily because people tend to look at a single isolated metric and then draw these vast overarching conclusions about their own personal net worth.
Right. Let's look at the raw numbers here. The overall median sales price for Parker County in May 2026 was $480,000.
Correct.
And the report specifically notes that this is down 1.7% from the $488,394 median we saw in May of 2025.
Right.
Now, I want to stop right there and just put myself in the shoes of a homeowner.
Okay, do it.
I live in Aledo. I'm mowing my lawn on a Saturday morning. I open an app on my phone, and I see a headline that literally says Parker County home prices drop 1.7%.
And you panic.
My immediate visceral reaction is absolute panic. I
Yeah.
feel like I just lost thousands of dollars of equity while I was out there trimming the hedges. Is my panic justified? Like, is this the canary in the coal mine for a larger market correction?
Your panic is entirely unwarranted,
Yeah.
but I will say it is a very common psychological reaction.
Well, that's a relief. But explain why it's unwarranted.
Let's dismantle that 1.7% drop by understanding the actual mechanism of a median price. A median price is simply the exact middle point of all the homes that happen to close in that specific 30-day window.
Just the middle of the stack.
Exactly. Half a home sold for more, half sold for less. The critical flaw in looking at a single month's median is that real estate is not a uniform commodity.
Meaning, it's not like looking at the price of a barrel of oil or an ounce of gold, right? Where every unit is totally identical.
Precisely. We're dealing with hundreds of entirely unique assets. And this brings us to the concept of natural variation and the housing mix.
Okay, give me an example of the housing mix.
Imagine a high-end car dealership. In week one, they sell five entry-level sedans and five luxury sports cars. The median price of a car sold that week sits somewhere in the middle.
Makes sense.
But in week two, purely by chance, they sell seven entry-level sedans and only three luxury sports cars. The median price of a car sold in week two will mathematically drop significantly.
Wait, but did the actual value of the sedans or the sports cars go down?
No, not at all. The underlying value of the inventory remained completely static. The only thing that changed was the specific mix of products that happened to cross the finish line that week.
That makes perfect sense. So in May, we might have just seen, I don't know, slightly more starter homes or mid-tier properties close compared to luxury acreage estates.
Exactly.
And that just naturally pulls that middle number down by a tiny fraction.
Exactly right. A 1.7% fluctuation in a single month's median across a county as diverse as Parker is honestly nothing more than statistical noise generated by the transaction mix.
Just statistical noise.
Yes. It does not indicate that the baseline value of property is depreciating.
Yeah.
And we can absolutely prove this by zooming out and looking at the broader, more stabilized data sets.
Let's do that. Let's look at those broader data events. If I look at the year-to-date overall median price, it sits at $459,750.
Right.
That is actually up 2.3% compared to the first 5 months of 2025.
Yeah.
And if we look at the first quarter data, the Q1 Market Watch report covering January through March, the median price was $460,000, which was a very solid 6% increase from Q1 of the previous year.
See, by widening the aperture, the volatility of the monthly housing mix is completely smoothed out, and that reveals the true underlying trajectory of the market.
Which is pointing up.
The trajectory is undeniably positive. Values are not collapsing.
There is another slice of data here that I think is really fascinating.
What's that?
If we isolate just the single family specific data for May 2026, so we're stripping out townhomes, condos, or vacant land, the average sales price was $520,612.
Okay.
That represents a 0% change year over year. It is mathematically flat.
Which is the ultimate indicator of a market finding equilibrium.
You think so? 0% means healthy.
Absolutely. The chaotic, completely unsustainable frenzy we witnessed a few years ago, where prices were escalating by 15 or 20% annually, that is over.
Thank goodness.
Truly. That kind of hyperappreciation breaks the affordability matrix and is ultimately really destructive to a local economy. What we are seeing now, with a flat average price and a steady, slow growth year-to-date median, is a healing organism.
I love that phrase, a healing
It
organism.
really is. The market has stopped sprinting, it has caught its breath, and it is settling into a sustainable, healthy stride.
Okay, so the baseline value is solid, but there is a huge difference between what a house is worth on paper and what a buyer is actually willing to write a check for.
Oh, massive difference.
And that brings us to a really telling metric, the list to close ratio. The data shows that in May 2026, buyers are closing at 95.7% of the original list price.
Right.
Walk me through the mechanics of that 95.7%.
The list-to-close ratio is arguably the most accurate barometer of negotiating power in the market. It measures the gap between the seller's initial ambition and the final economic reality.
So it's basically what you want versus what you get.
Exactly. Let's apply the math. If you list your home for $500,000 and the market average holds, you will close the transaction at $478,500.
So roughly a $21,500 difference. Does that mean buyers are just universally coming in and offering $20,000 less than the asking price right out of the gate?
Not necessarily. That 4.3% delta is an umbrella that covers a whole multitude of negotiating tactics. It could certainly be a straight price reduction negotiated on the front end.
Okay.
However, it frequently encompasses seller concessions.
Oh, seller concessions. Explain how a seller concession works in this current environment, because I think a lot of people are confused by that.
Yeah, it's very common right now. Let's say a buyer loves your $500,000 house, but the current interest rates push their monthly payment just outside their comfort zone.
Right. Maybe your rates ticked up that week.
Exactly. So instead of dropping the price of the home, the buyer might offer the full $500,000. But ask you, the seller, to contribute $10,000 toward their closing costs.
Oh, interesting. So the headline price stays high.
Yes. Okay. And the buyer then uses that $10,000 to buy down their mortgage rate with their lender, securing a lower interest rate and a cheaper monthly payment.
That's a smart strategy.
It is. But on the closing disclosure, the seller ultimately nets less money, which mathematically pulls that list-to-close ratio down to 96 or 95%, even if the headline sales price remained high.
Okay.
It can also encompass money credited to the buyer after the home inspection to cover necessary repairs.
That is a crucial distinction. It means the market isn't experiencing a slashing of values. It's just experiencing a return to traditional negotiation.
Yes, totally normal negotiation.
Because during the peak of the pandemic boom, we saw list-to-close ratios over 100%. People were waiving appraisals and just blindly bidding over asking.
Oh, it was madness.
At 95.7%, it seems like sellers are still doing incredibly well, provided they aren't, you know, totally delusional about their starting price.
Well, that is the caveat right there. Sellers are retaining nearly 96 cents on the dollar, which is the hallmark of a strong, stable market.
Right.
But that assumes the initial list price is tethered to the reality of mid-2026 comparables. If a seller prices their home based on the peak hysteria of 2022, entirely ignoring the current data, they will not see 95.7%.
No, they're going to see crickets.
Exactly. They will see their property sit stagnant.
Which brings us perfectly to the concept of time. If values are stable and sellers are getting 96 cents on the dollar, the very next question is, how long do they have to wait to actually get that money?
Right, the timeline.
Let's talk about the ticking clock, the days on market, or DOM. In May 2026, the average days on market in Parker County was 70 days.
Yep.
Interestingly, that is actually down 10.3% from the 78 days it took a year ago. Year to date, the average DOM is 84 days, which is down slightly from 86 days.
And translating those data points into a human timeline is really essential, because 70 days can feel very abstract when it's just on a spreadsheet.
It really does.
In real estate, 70 days equates to exactly 10 weeks. That is 10 weeks from the exact moment you hammer the for sale sign into your front yard to the moment the title company wires the funds into your bank account.
Let's actually map out those 10 weeks, because I think a lot of people underestimate the sheer mechanics of a real estate transaction. Like, what actually happens in a 70-day window?
It is a highly regimented process. Week one is entirely dedicated to the launch.
Getting it ready.
Yes. This involves professional photography, syndicating the listing across the MLS and various real estate portals, and perhaps hosting an initial open house.
Okay, so that's week one.
Weeks two through four are generally your primary showing window. This is when the active buyer pool actually comes and tours the home. By week four or five, in a 70-day market, you should be receiving and negotiating an offer.
So by week five, you theoretically have a signed contract. You are halfway through the 70 days. What is happening in the back half?
The back half is the escrow and due diligence period, and this is where the timeline is largely dictated by third parties.
The inspectors and the banks.
Exactly. You have the buyer's option period, where they bring in licensed inspectors to evaluate the foundation, the roof, the HVAC systems. Following the inspection, there is usually a secondary round of negotiations for repairs.
Right, going back and forth on who fixes what.
Once that hurdle is cleared, the buyer's lender orders an independent appraisal to ensure the home's value justifies the loan amount. Finally, the file goes into underwriting, where the bank meticulously verifies the buyer's employment, tax returns, and credit history.
So all of that admin takes up the rest of the time.
Yeah, that entire mechanical process, inspections, appraisals, underwriting, that takes roughly 30 to 40 days on its own.
Wow, when you break it down like that, 70 days doesn't sound like a long time at all.
It really isn't.
It actually sounds like the absolute minimum amount of time required to physically execute a secure legal transaction involving $500,000.
It is a brisk pace, for sure. And it is incredibly important to contextualize this pace with the current calendar.
Okay, right.
We are speaking in late June right now. The timeline is not a vacuum. It constantly interacts with the rhythms of family life.
Right, of course. If you are moving to Aledo or Weatherford specifically for the school districts, the first day of school is looming in mid-August.
Exactly. If a family wants to be moved in, unpacked, and have their children officially registered for the fall semester, they need the keys in their hand by the first week of August at the latest.
Wow, okay.
Working backward from early August, a 70-day transaction cycle means that a buyer needed to be actively touring homes and writing offers by late May.
Oh, wow.
If you are a buyer entering the market today, in late June, you are already behind the curve for a preschool year move-in.
That creates a very real, very palpable sense of urgency. And what fascinates me is that the DOM is 10.3% faster than it was last year. Homes are moving quicker. Let's talk about the psychology of that. How does a falling days on market figure shift the balance of power between a buyer and a seller?
The days on market metric is effectively the psychological leverage gauge.
Leverage gauge, I like that.
When inventory sits stagnant, when the average DOM stretches to 90, 100, or 120 days, the psychological power shifts entirely to the buyer. A buyer walks into a house that has been sitting empty for 4 months, and they literally smell blood in the water.
Oh, yeah. They know the seller is hurting.
They feel emboldened to submit aggressive lowball offers, demanding massive concessions, because they know the seller is likely exhausted and probably carrying dual mortgage payments.
But at 70 days, that dynamic just doesn't exist.
No, it does not. At 70 days, the inventory is churning efficiently. A buyer who looks at a well-priced home on day 14 knows that if they don't submit a strong offer, someone else will by day 28.
Right.
It forces buyers to act with intention and completely limits their ability to leverage time against the seller.
I would characterize it this way. 10 weeks is not an emergency market.
No.
We are not seeing the absolute madness of 2021, where buyers were lined up down the street, waiving their right to an inspection and throwing $50,000 over asking price within 3 hours of a listing going live.
Thankfully, no.
But it is definitely not a sluggish, stagnant market either. You do not put a house on the market in Parker County right now and just forget about it.
It is a highly meritocratic market. It aggressively rewards preparation. Because the overall average is 70 days, it means that the sellers who execute perfectly, those who declutter, stage the property, hire high-end photographers, and price the home mathematically accurately from day one, those sellers are securing contracts in 15 or 20 days.
Wow, so they are crushing the average.
They are beating the average significantly, yes.
So if they're selling in 20 days, who is dragging the average up to 70? Who are the people sitting on the market for 120 days?
The average is dragged upward by the aspirational sellers.
Ah, aspiration.
These are the homeowners who suffer from what we call the endowment effect. They place an irrationally high value on their own property simply because they own it.
Right. My house is special.
Exactly. They insist that their 15-year-old heavily worn carpet is a feature, not a detriment. And they list the home $40,000 above the nearest comparable sale.
And what happens?
The market responds to that overpricing with absolute silence. They sit for months, stubbornly refusing to reduce the price, and they pull the overall county DOM average upward.
It all comes back to pricing it right. Okay, let's connect some logical dots here. If homes are selling faster than last year, down to 70 days, and they are selling in higher volumes, with 329 closings in a single month, basic physics dictates that the pool of available homes must be shrinking.
Yes.
If water is draining out of the tub faster than it's pouring in, the water level naturally drops.
That is the fundamental macroeconomic mechanism driving everything we have discussed today. We have to analyze the supply side of the equation.
Let's dive into the inventory numbers, because this is the underlying architecture of the market. In May 2026, the active supply of homes for sale in Parker County was 1,531.
Right.
That is a 7.1% decrease from the 1,648 homes sitting on the market in May of 2025.
A 7.1% contraction in available inventory is a highly measurable, highly impactful tightening of the market.
Yeah, that's not just noise. And the report translates this raw number into a metric called month supply of inventory. In May, Parker County stood at 5.8 months of supply, which is down 12.1% from the 6.6 months of supply we had last year.
Right.
And just for additional context, the Q1 data showed supply was even tighter earlier in the year, hovering around 5.4 months. Before we analyze what 5.8 actually means, can you give me a foundational explanation of the months of supply metric? Like, how is it calculated and why do economists rely on it so heavily?
Of course. Months supply of inventory is the ultimate measure of market absorption. The calculation is relatively straightforward. You take the total number of active listings currently on the market, and you divide it by the average number of homes selling per month.
Okay.
Conceptually, it asks a hypothetical question. If a magical barrier came down today, and absolutely no new homes were allowed to be listed for sale, how long would it take for the current pool of buyers to purchase every single remaining house on the market, based on the current pace of sales?
So if there are 100 houses for sale, and buyers are purchasing 10 houses a month, you have exactly a 10-month supply.
Precisely. Now, historically, the real estate industry relies on a golden rule of thumb regarding this metric, the 6-month dividing line.
The famous 6-month rule.
Yes. 6 months of supply is considered the holy grail of a perfectly balanced equilibrium market. At 6 months, the supply of available homes perfectly matches the velocity of buyer demand. Neither the buyer nor the seller holds a systemic overarching advantage.
It is a perfectly level playing field. But if supply rises above 6 months, say it creeps up to 8, 9, or 10 months, what happens to the psychology and the pricing?
When supply bloats past 6 months, you enter a definitive buyer's market. Inventory accumulates.
They have options.
So many options. Buyers have a tremendous amount of choice. If a seller won't negotiate, the buyer simply walks across the street to one of the 10 other available homes.
Right.
Because of that abundance, homes sit on the market longer, DOM skyrockets, and prices begin to soften or overtly decline as sellers become desperate to attract that limited pool of buyers.
And what about the reverse?
Conversely, when supply drops below 6 months, you enter a seller's market. Scarcity is the defining characteristic. The fewer options available, the more competition there is for each individual asset, which drives DOM down and keeps prices firm or pushes them upward.
Okay, so applying that framework to Parker County, we are sitting at 5.8 months of supply.
Yes. We are sitting just a microscopic hair under the equilibrium line.
Almost perfectly balanced, but slightly leaning.
Exactly. It means the market still tilts ever so slightly in favor of the seller. It is not a commanding advantage by any means.
Right.
It is absolutely nothing like the violent, unprecedented supply squeeze we witnessed in 2021 and 2022, where inventory nationwide plunged to 1 month or less, causing absolute chaos. But 5.8 months is tight enough to create a competitive floor.
Which explains the prices.
It is the exact reason why, as we discussed earlier, sellers are successfully capturing 95.7% of their asking price and homes are moving in 70 days. The slight scarcity protects the value.
But here is where my brain hits a massive speed bump.
Oh.
Let's look at the new listings data. These are the fresh homes coming onto the market. In May 2026, there were 484 new listings added to the Parker County market. That is a sharp 14.6% drop from the 567 new listings we saw in May of 2025.
Right, a significant drop.
And if we look year to date, new listings are at 2,448, which is down 1.9%. Walk me through the logic here because it feels broken.
Okay, let's look at it.
If the market still tilts towards sellers, if values are solid at nearly 96 cents on the dollar and homes are selling faster, why on earth are new listings dropping by almost 15%? If I know I can sell my house quickly and for top dollar, shouldn't every homeowner in the county be rushing to put a sign in the yard and cash out?
Well, in a vacuum, yes, that would be the logical economic behavior. But the real estate market does not operate in a vacuum. It operates within the context of macro financial history.
Ah, context.
The 14.6% drop in new listings is the direct, quantifiable result of what economists call the lock-in effect. To understand it, we actually have to look back at the monetary policy of the pandemic era.
The era of incredibly cheap money.
Exactly. Between 2020 and early 2022, the Federal Reserve suppressed interest rates to historic, completely unprecedented lows to stimulate the economy. As a result, millions of Americans, including thousands of homeowners in Parker County, either purchase new homes or refinance their existing mortgages at 30-year fixed rates of 2.5%, 3%, or 3.5%.
Basically free money.
That artificially cheap debt was a tremendous financial gift to those homeowners, but it created a set of golden handcuffs.
Let's put actual math to those golden handcuffs so people understand the severity of the lock-in effect. Walk me through a hypothetical kitchen table conversation a family is having right now.
Okay, let's take a family living in a three-bedroom home in Aledo. They just had a third child, and they desperately want to upsize to a four-bedroom home.
Very common scenario.
They currently hold a $400,000 mortgage and at a 3% interest rate. Their principal and interest payment is roughly $600, $680 a month. Now, they look at the current market. They see that they can easily sell their home, but to buy the larger $600,000 four-bedroom home, they will have to take out a new mortgage at the current market rate, which might be hovering around 7%.
The cost of the money has literally more than doubled.
Yes. A $500,000 loan at 7% carries a principal and interest payment of roughly $3,320 a month.
Oh my gosh.
Exactly. So, to gain one extra bedroom, their monthly housing cost would literally double. When they sit at the kitchen table and run that math, the friction is simply too high.
They just can't stomach it.
They experience a profound psychological and financial paralysis. They decide that instead of moving, they will just convert the home office into a bedroom, or build an addition, or simply stay put and endure the cramped space. They become reluctant sellers.
That is a brilliant explanation. The drop in new listings isn't because people don't want to sell. It's because they simply cannot afford to become buyers in the current interest rate environment. They are locked into the incredible financial asset of their old mortgage rate.
Furthermore, even if they have the cash to absorb the higher rate, they are intimidated by the tight inventory.
What do you mean?
Well, they know their house will sell in 70 days, but they look at the 5.8 months of supply and realize it might take them 6 months to find a suitable replacement property. The fear of being rendered temporarily homeless keeps their property off the market entirely. This systemic reluctance to list is artificially suppressing supply, which in turn acts as a brace, holding property values up despite broader economic headwinds.
It is a massive interconnected web. But wait, if new listings are dropping by nearly 15%, what does that do to the demand side of the equation?
That's where things get interesting.
Because the data shows that pending sales, which are the homes that went under contract but haven't officially closed yet, were 247 in May. That is a steep 18.5% drop year over year. If pending sales are plunging, doesn't that mean the buyers are finally giving up and walking away?
See, this is exactly why we cannot rely on single month data points to diagnose the health of a market. Yes, a single month drop of 18.5% in pending sales sounds like a massive alarm bell.
It sounds terrible.
However, you must contextualize that monthly drop against the year-to-date reality. The year-to-date pending sales in Parker County sit at 1,434. That figure is actually up 6.3% from the prior year.
Oh, wow. So the broader trend of buyer activity is still growing.
Unequivocally. The 18.5% drop in May is not an indicator of evaporating demand. It is just a mathematical consequence of the inventory drought we just discussed.
Oh, I see.
If fresh new listings drop by 14.6%, it is a mathematical certainty that your pending sales will eventually take a corresponding dip in any given 30-day window. You simply cannot put a house under contract if the house was never listed for sale in the first place.
Ah, you can't buy what isn't on the shelf.
Precisely. The monthly pending dip doesn't signal economic distress among the buyer pool. It simply signals a market that was starved for fresh inventory in May.
They were just waiting.
Yes. The buyers were there, as proven by the strong year-to-date volume and that 95.7% list-to-close ratio, but they simply had less product to choose from during that specific month.
It's like a game of musical chairs where someone quietly removed a few of the chairs.
Right? A good way to look at it.
The music is still playing, the players are still circling, everyone still desperately wants to sit down, but there is physically less furniture in the room to occupy.
That is a very accurate analogy. The demand is circling, waiting for the supply to materialize.
Okay, everything we have discussed so far, the days on market, the months of supply, the list to close ratios, This all paints a very clear, highly analytical picture of a standard residential market.
It does.
When we talk about these metrics, my brain immediately pictures a classic suburban neighborhood. I see the cul-de-sacs, the manicured lawns, the sidewalks. But Parker County has a completely alternate identity.
Oh, a huge one.
It has vast, wide open spaces, sprawling acreage, working horse ranches, and properties that absolutely defy simple spreadsheet analysis. I want to pivot and look at the rural data.
Analyzing rural land and agricultural properties requires an entirely different methodology and, frankly, a much higher degree of data literacy.
Why is that?
Because the standard metrics often just completely fail to capture the reality on the ground.
Let me give an example from the report. I'm looking at the May 2026 MLS summary report for Parker County, and I am looking specifically at the category labeled Resi Sale Farm. According to this official academic report, there were exactly zero recorded closings in that category for the entire month of May. Zero. If I take this data feed literally, I have to assume that farming in North Texas has been outlawed, or that every ranch in the county suddenly ceased to exist.
And that perfectly illustrates the inherent danger of relying exclusively on automated algorithmic reports without possessing deep local context.
Yeah, it'd have to be wrong.
A zero in a specific data column on a monthly report does not mean that working ranches or acreage properties aren't being bought and sold. It means that the formal MLS categorization system has massive systemic blind spots.
So how does a transaction just not show up in the farm category? Like, where does it go?
Well, real estate agents are the ones inputting the data into the MLS. When an agent lists a 20-acre property with a house on it, they have to select a category. Very often, rural land and acreage transactions are simply lumped under the broader, more generic land umbrella, completely bypassing the farm designation.
Yeah. So it's just human error or laziness?
Or strategy. Alternatively, an agent might list a working equestrian property simply as a single-family home that happens to feature a very large lot size because they believe that categorization will trigger more automated alerts for buyers moving out from the city.
Oh, that's tricky.
The transaction happens, the money changes hands, but it is effectively invisible if you are only filtering for the Resi Sale Farm tag.
This is such a vital lesson in critical thinking. You just cannot take a single statistic at face value.
Never.
It is like pointing a traffic camera at one specific lane of a highway, staring at it for an hour, seeing no red sports cars pass through that specific lane, and subsequently declaring to the world that red sports cars are extinct. You are looking through a lens that is far too narrow to capture reality.
That is exactly right. Mm. Furthermore, rural land operates as what economists call a thinly transacted niche. To understand why standard metrics fail here, we have to look at the concept of comparable sales.
Right, the comps.
In a suburban subdivision in Aledo, establishing value is relatively simple. A 2,500-square-foot, four-bedroom house built in 2018 is a nearly perfect, identical comparable for the 2,500-square-foot, four-bedroom house built in 2018 right next door. The variables are minimal. You can algorithmically predict the value.
But out in the county, no two properties are the same.
Not even close. Every single piece of acreage is a highly unique asset with a really complex matrix of variables. Two adjoining 50-acre parcels could have vastly different valuations.
Walk me through what actually dictates the value of raw land or a farm, because it clearly isn't just the square footage of a house. Like, what are the variables?
The variables are highly specialized. Does the property have reliable access to surface water, like a creek or a tank? Or are you entirely dependent on drilling deep water wells?
Oh, water's huge.
Exactly. Who owns the mineral rights beneath the soil, and are they actually conveying with the sale? What is the topography? Is it improved, fertile coastal Bermuda pasture ready for grazing cattle? Or is it 50 acres of dense, rocky brush that will require $100,000 of heavy machinery work just to clear?
And what about fences? I've heard fences are a big deal.
Oh, what is the quality of the exterior fencing? Perimeter fencing is incredibly expensive to install.
And what about taxes? I hear people talk about agricultural exemptions all the time in Texas. How does that factor into the value?
Agricultural exemptions are arguably the most critical financial component of rural land ownership. In Texas, if your land is actively used for agricultural purposes, raising cattle, cutting hay, or even keeping commercial honeybees, the county appraises the land based on its agricultural production value rather than its potential market value for residential development. This can reduce your property tax burden by thousands, sometimes tens of thousands of dollars a year. However, maintaining that exemption requires adhering to strict county guidelines regarding the number of animal units per acre and demonstrating a consistent history of active use.
So if you buy 50 acres that already has an established ag exemption, it is inherently far more valuable than 50 acres right next door that lost its exemption because the tax holding costs are completely different.
Exactly.
And you cannot capture any of that complexity in a monthly median price spreadsheet.
Precisely. Which is why in this specific, highly nuanced sector of real estate, relying purely on sterile data feeds is practically useless. You cannot navigate the rural market with an algorithm. You require a human guide who possesses deep operational knowledge of the actual asset class.
And for context, this is a perfect opportunity to mention the sponsors who provided the specialized data for this deep dive, David Peet from Peet Realty. You can find their insights at peetrealty.com or reach them directly at 214-287-0009. The reason we utilize their perspective is because they are not just staring at MLS screens in a corporate office. David and his wife literally care for retired Tennessee walkers that they previously rode on the LBJ Grasslands trails up here in North Texas. They actively raise British white cattle.
And from an analytical standpoint, that operational background is invaluable. Why does it matter that a real estate broker raises cattle? Because it means they possess intrinsic, tactile knowledge of the variables we just discussed.
Right. They actually know the dirt.
When a buyer is looking to purchase 10 or 50 acres in Parker County, they need a representative who understands soil types, who can identify proper drainage, who knows the structural integrity of a barn, and who actually understands the bureaucratic nuances of transferring an agricultural exemption.
You need a partner who knows the difference between a field that looks pretty in a photograph and a field that actually drains properly during a Texas flash flood. Furthermore, because so much of the rural market is thinly transacted, a massive amount of these deals happen completely off-market. They happen through handshakes, local relationships, and specialized networks long before they ever hit a public beta feed.
Very true.
If you are relying purely on an internet search to find a ranch, you are missing the actual underlying market.
Exactly. The ultimate takeaway regarding the rural sector, and frankly, the entire Parker County market in mid-year 2026, is that you must elevate your perspective. You cannot be reactionary. You have to synthesize the monthly statistical blips with the broader quarterly and annual trends to see the true landscape.
So let's do exactly that to bring this all home. Let's look back just a little bit to prove this overarching trend.
Let's do it.
We have spent a tremendous amount of time dissecting the May data, which showed a few minor dips in median price and new listings. But if we roll the calendar back just 2 months to the end of the first quarter, the picture looks completely different. Let's look at March 2026.
Analyzing March serves as the definitive proof of concept for the central thesis of our entire discussion today.
Because the data for March is absolutely wild compared to May. In that single 30-day window of March 2026, Parker County saw a massive influx of 512 new listings hit the market.
Huge spike.
It saw 255 closed sales. And critically, it saw an explosive 12.6% jump in the median sales price specifically for that month.
Contrast that staggering 12.6% price spike in March against the minor 1.7% dip we saw in May. That contrast solidifies everything we have discussed about statistical noise versus structural trends.
It really paints a clear picture.
Parker County is experiencing healthy, natural monthly volatility. That volatility is basically a mask covering a highly stable, consistently positive long-term foundation.
It really highlights the idea that real estate is not a mechanical straight line drawn on a graph by a computer. It is a seasonal, breathing, living organism.
Yes.
Think about the human psychology of what happens in March. The bitter winter weather breaks. The bluebonnets start blooming along the highways.
Everyone gets spring fever.
Exactly. Families get their tax returns back, giving them a liquidity injection. They return from spring break vacations and collectively decide they want to be in a new house before the end of the summer. That collective psychological shift triggers a flood of inventory 512 listings, and buyers aggressively pursue them, driving the median price up by nearly 13% in a complete frenzy of spring activity.
And then the organism exhales.
Yeah.
By May, that initial massive surge of spring demand has been largely absorbed, the fresh inventory tightens, dropping by 14% as we discussed, and the median price naturally relaxes by a percentage point or two as the transaction mix shifts.
If you only look at May, you are terrified that the market is weakening and your equity is vanishing.
Right.
And if you only look at March, you are terrified that the market is exploding into another unsustainable hyperinflationary bubble. But if you synthesize the two, if you look at the entirety of the first quarter and the year-to-date figures together, you see the undeniable truth.
You really do.
You see a market on a steady upward trajectory, successfully managing its own seasonal rhythms.
The organism is healthy. It is self-regulating.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into the data, let's distill all of this complex economics down to actionable advice. What does this actually mean for the human beings listening today?
Good idea.
The people standing by the grill, holding a spatula, debating the future of Parker County with their neighbors. Let's bifurcate the advice. What is the ultimate takeaway for the buyer?
For a buyer looking to enter Parker County in mid-2026, the message derived from the data is one of cautious optimism. The chaos has subsided.
Which is great news.
It is. You have breathing room. You have the time to schedule a second showing, to walk the property line, to hire a meticulous inspector, and to make a thoughtful, mathematically sound decision. You are no longer forced to waive your financial protections within 3 hours of a house hitting the market, as you were in the absolute frenzy of 2022.
That is a huge relief for buyers. But is there a warning hidden in that 5.8 months of supply?
Yes. The warning is not to mistake a stable, normalized market for a weak one. With inventory sitting just below equilibrium at 5.8 months, you have absolutely no leverage to demand heavy, punitive discounts.
So don't go in lowballing.
The year-to-date sales volumes prove that you are competing in a market that is actively, aggressively moving. Be deliberate in your search, but be realistic in your negotiations. If a home is priced correctly and presents well, lowballing the seller by 20% will simply result in your offer being ignored while another buyer secures the property.
Deliberate but realistic. I think that is perfect. Now let's flip the coin. What is the ultimate takeaway for the homeowner, the person thinking about putting that sign in the yard?
For the seller, the message is equally grounding and highly encouraging. Your home will sell. The underlying values across the county are holding incredibly strong.
Yeah, 96 cents on the dollar.
Exactly. The buyer pool is highly active, as demonstrated by the 1,300 year-to-date closings. You can expect to retain nearly 96% of your asking price.
But there is a massive if attached to that, right?
An absolutely massive if. The market will reward you, but only if you price the property based on the mathematical reality of mid-2026 and not the frenzied emotional peak of the past.
Right.
The data proves that if you price it accurately and you present it impeccably, you will likely secure a contract within that 70-day window. But the data also offers a stern warning.
Which is?
If you succumb to the endowment effect, if you get greedy and test the market with an aspirational, completely unjustified price, the active buyer pool will bypass you. You will sit stagnant in the inventory, dragging up the days on market average, and eventually you will be forced to chase the market down with painful price reductions. Price it right, present it well, and the market rewards you.
Price it right, present it well. It is timeless advice, but it is incredibly validating to see it mathematically proven by the current data. I want to offer a quick reminder to everyone listening. All the data we explored and decoded today comes directly from the NTRAIS Local Market Update for May 2026, the MarketWatch Quarterly Report for Q1, and the Texas A&M Real Estate Research Center MLS Summary Reports.
Yep.
And again, if you want localized guidance to navigate this, especially if you are venturing into that highly complex, thinly transacted farm and ranch sector, visit peachrealty.com.
Before we sign off, synthesizing all of this data raises one final, highly provocative question that I think is really worth mulling over.
Ooh, lay it on me.
We spent a lot of time discussing the tightening of inventory. We see fewer new listings hitting the market due to the lock-in effect, and we see the sheer volume of buyers absorbing the available homes. We also noted the blurring lines in the data between formal farm properties and residential land.
Right.
As the DFW Metroplex continues its relentless westward expansion, and as high-value suburban aesthetics increasingly collide with Parker County's rich agricultural history, what happens to the core character of this region over the next decade?
Wow, that is an incredibly profound question. We are essentially watching a demographic and geographical evolution in real time.
We really are. Are we witnessing the quiet, slow-motion transformation of traditional, working rural land into a vast network of sprawling, high-value acreage estates? Are the days of the 50-acre working cattle ranch near Aledo numbered, destined to be subdivided into 5-acre luxury parcels?
It's definitely possible.
Next time you drive out past Azle, or you take the back roads around Springtown, look out at the empty land, look at the pastures and the old fencing. And ask yourself, based on the velocity, the sales, and the firmness of the pricing we just decoded, what will this exact same data look like 10 summers from now? Will the concept of a true working farm in eastern Parker County be relegated purely to nostalgia?
That is something heavy to chew on. As you are slicing the brisket, as you are watching the fireworks explode over the fields this 4th of July, look around that landscape and try to imagine it 10 years out. The data unequivocally says the ground beneath our feet is changing, steadily, firmly, and inevitably. I want to thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive.
Thanks for having me.
We took the murky, contradictory waters of economic data, and hopefully we made the picture clear as a bell, giving you the tools to understand the mechanisms actually driving your local world. Enjoy your summer, keep having those great informed debates around the grill, and above all, stay curious. We will catch you on the next deep dive.